Moncrief on News Talk.
Do you remember when fat was bad? Then they changed that a bit into good fat and bad fat. Eggs were terrible, but now they're grand. Why do certain foods get demonised? And why does it change? We're joined by the dietitian Sarah Keogh. Good afternoon, Sarah.
Good afternoon.
I'd say things like Instagram drive you mad.
Well, do you know, even before Instagram, like you were talking about the fat fad in the late 90s, and we didn't even have social media then, and everyone was going around going, oh, you have to avoid fat. You just get fads in nutrition all the time, and they come, they last a couple of years, and then everyone gets bored with it, and then somebody new pops up, and you get, you know, eat all your protein, or don't eat fat, or cut out carbs, or whatever it is this week. So, you know, as time goes by, just there'll be another fad again. But yeah, it's very frustrating when you, because people go, oh, you nutritionists are always changing your mind, or going, the nutrition science actually is very steady. It's just the latest person on Instagram or whatever who's just talking rubbish.
Okay, and so the fads come from, I mean, there are like proper scientists out there doing research on that thing
there
all the time.
There are proper scientists. Yes. There really are. So nutrition is a lot of biochemistry and molecular biology, and it's how all of the, you know, when I say chemicals in food, but like the healthy good ones interact with the chemicals that make up your body. So there's a huge, vast amount of science on that and very detailed science. But then you have the fad. And I think a lot of people miss the whole biochemistry side of it, and they kind of think of it more along the lines of, you know, cooking and eating, which is part of it. But the actual kind of the nutrition itself, the science is very steady. But yeah, the fads just come and go.
Yeah. So eggs. No, eggs do have a lot of cholesterol. Is that correct?
So they have some cholesterol in them. And cholesterol is a funny thing in that most of the cholesterol you have in your blood is made out of saturated fat. So you'll eat something like cream or butter or biscuits, and the saturated fat in that goes to your liver. Your liver makes cholesterol out of it. But there is cholesterol specifically in some foods. So liver and eggs would be two. So if someone does have high cholesterol, we would recommend that they limit eggs to about 4 eggs a week. And that's because a lot of people with high cholesterol have a little genetic quirk that makes them absorb more of the cholesterol from the eggs. Mm. So you will have people who can eat 10 eggs a week and their cholesterol is fine, and you'll have somebody who eats 3 and they have high cholesterol. So if you do have high cholesterol, yes, eggs about 4 a week.
Yeah. What is cholesterol, and is it necessarily bad?
No, it's not. I mean, cholesterol, it's a type of fat. We actually make a lot of our hormones out of it. So if you go back to the sort of the biochemistry side of things, cholesterol is part of the molecules that make up a lot of our hormones. So we do actually need it. It's a bad idea to have zero. But as I said, your body makes it and we make plenty of it. So it's fine. So we need a certain amount. But when it does get too high, it does start to kind of, it interacts with other things in the body, and it causes blockages in the arteries, so the brain, the heart, all over the body as well. So that's why we'll always talk about getting your cholesterol to a nice healthy level.
Yeah. And our potatoes, our traditional diet back in the day, are they necessary? Because I remember reading someplace that part of the reason, this is going back to the 18th century, but it's a slow release food. So that's why people would rely on it. They didn't have that many options, I suppose, but
no, potatoes are perfectly fine. They wouldn't be terribly slow release, but they're absolutely grand. The thing about it is that, you know, when we talk about slow release, we're often talking about how much your blood sugar level might go up after you eat. And it's worth remembering, because a lot of people are going around going, oh my God, my blood sugar goes up after I eat. It is supposed to. This is normal. But it's supposed to come back down again later. But potatoes will put it up. But, you know, you don't eat foods in isolation. Like if you have potatoes with your, you know, the traditional Irish meat potatoes, two veg, you know, your release in terms of carbohydrate into the blood is much more reduced. So they're fine. But potatoes are great, particularly if you eat them with the skins. There's fiber, there's B vitamins. They're actually a great food, and they're very filling compared even to other carbohydrate sources. So when you actually do studies on satiety and how full people are when they eat, if you eat potatoes, you feel fuller for fewer calories than you do with other foods. Now, I'm not talking chips. I'm talking like boiled potatoes or mashed potato or baked potato. If you start soaking the whole thing in fat, yes, the calories go up by quite a bit. But even that now and again is going to be fine.
Yeah. Someone's texting in to ask about coconut oil. Yeah. That was highlighted as a healthy oil to cook with.
It was never highlighted by anybody who studies nutrition. Let me just call it out. Now, I have to say, it's an oil I love in terms of flavour. It's gorgeous, but it is a saturated fat, and the research is very clear that it does raise cholesterol like any other saturated fat. So it's one of those to limit with that. So.
Yeah. Now, ultra-processed food, are they bad in all circumstances?
Oh, not at all. Oh, this is another one of these fads where we've got this big scary name and everyone's running around talking about it. And I love the research at the moment when you actually say to people, what's an ultra-processed food? They can't answer. So it was a bit like years ago and said, what's gluten? So ultra-processed foods, they count as a huge range of foods. Technically, what they are is a food that has been processed in some way, which includes cooking, and has food additives. And the whole idea around a lot of the fuss about ultra-processed foods is they zone in on treat foods. So a lot of your crisps, biscuits, cakes, things like that. And they're going, oh, wow, if you eat a lot of these, you're more likely to get heart disease or whatever, which you do. But we've known that for 50 years. What you look at with ultra-processed foods is some of them are actually very healthy and others are not. So it depends on the nutrition. So it's not the processing as much as the nutrition. So if you're eating ultra-processed foods, like some whole grain breads would technically be ultra-processed, but if they're high fibre, they're totally fine. And we know that they are associated with reduced risk, for example, of colon cancer. So just because a food is ultra-processed, it does not automatically mean that it is bad for you. The thing you want to look at is less about the processing and more about what's the actual nutrition. Has it got a lot of fibre in it? Then it's going to be probably good. Is it really high in sugar or salt? Maybe a little bit less of that one. So it's the nutrition as it always has been.
Yeah, a lot of breads, because you can... I went through a phase of looking at the sugar content in what looked like really healthy bread, and it was banging with sugar.
Well, you know, this is the thing. We're terribly worried about sugar because that was the big fad there about 10 years ago. And people were saying to us, sugar is toxic. And you're like, it is not. Arsenic is toxic, right? And even in the EU, they actually say you want to limit your sugar to 10 teaspoons of added sugar a day. So I'm not saying you have to eat them, but that's, you know, we're not saying ban it, but we want to limit it. But a little bit of sugar in foods does a lot of things in terms of enhancing flavor a little bit. So we know people eat more fiber if they actually have a little bit of sugar with it. Now that's different to eating six packets of jelly. So it's like judicial use of it. So if you're using, like, you know, if you like plain yogurt, brilliant. But if you like a fruit yogurt with a little bit of sugar in it, that's totally fine as well. But it's kind of, if you're worried about sugar, I'd be looking at things like soft drinks that you're looking at maybe 10 to 12 teaspoons of added sugar in, you know, in a soft drink. But a little bit that's added to other healthy foods, I wouldn't be too concerned about.
Yeah. All right, tomatoes. It was the whole thing that it was going to give you arthritis.
Oh, yeah. I worked for a while in an osteoarthritis program and it was so interesting. There was, I don't know what the book was, but it came out and said, oh, if you eat these acidic foods, it basically dissolves your joints. And you're like, not even remotely. So the amount of people that give up tomatoes, and I actually got a hug from somebody one day when they were saying, I've given up tomatoes for about 3 years and I love them to fix my knees. And you're like, you're fine. You can go back on them. So no, they're absolutely fine. Like if you're looking at joints in terms of nutrition, we know fish oils are really good. Vitamin D is kind of an interesting one, but the biggest one is actually movement. Which sounds so weird. And I know when I was working on the program and the physio was like, no, you have to exercise. And they're like, yeah, but I'm in agony. And they're like, but actually, it's the best pain relief. So it was really one of the difficulties was getting people started. And I would say talk to a physio about that one. But I found that fascinating. They found that the exercise was more effective than most of the pain relief medicines that they were taking.
So. Yeah. You mentioned gluten. That was that was really hot a couple of years ago.
It was. And, you know, I actually work with the Celiac Society. So I work a lot with people with celiac disease. So I think the fad for gluten-free drove the celiacs crazy because you've celiacs who absolutely have to avoid every scrap of gluten as if like similar to peanut allergy. And then you had this huge fad at the time. And then now, these days, everyone nearly dismisses it. If someone says they're celiac, like they roll their eyes. But it was, I mean, you know, gluten can do things. But one of the things, I think one of the reasons the gluten-free fad, I think, went on for so much is that we know that 80% of celiacs in Ireland are not diagnosed. So if you went on the gluten-free fad and you were an undiagnosed celiac, you suddenly felt amazing. So you were like, oh, wow, there's something to this. So, you know, you could see that's why it drifted. But if someone, I would obviously say, if you think you've the remotest reaction to wheat, rather than just cutting it out, go and get your celiac test because your celiac test will be negative if you cut out the gluten first.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where we miss a lot of people.
Yeah, is a celiac test, what do you do?
Keep eating gluten. Yeah. You need to be on it for at least 6 weeks. And then you go to your doctor, your GP, you skip sort of food sensitivity tests because they won't pick it up and they won't rule it out either. So it's into your GP, blood test from your GP. With kids, if the level is high enough, that will diagnose them. But with adults, they'll often need a biopsy as well.
Yeah.
That. No, but you know what? It's grand. You're sedated for it. It's painless. It's totally fine.
Yeah. Now, and dairy, that's another bad one. And my sense is an awful lot of people claim to be allergic to dairy and maybe they are, maybe they're not.
I love that, you know, no matter where, I love when I go out and especially people don't know I'm a dietitian and somebody mentions literally any medical condition and someone pops up and goes, well, you better cut out wheat and dairy. And you're like, you really shouldn't. Like dairy's getting demonized at the moment. And it's such a fantastic food. Like dietitians love this because it's so rich in calcium, which is so important for bone health. And people say to me, well, I'm getting calcium from green veg. It's 120 bags of spinach a day. For your calcium from green veg. Okay, so it's not doing it. But I see things like they talk about dairy causes acne. We have no research. There's literally not one single study that shows if you cut out dairy that acne gets better. You know, stuff like that. So people are very quick to sort of cut it out. And I go, you know, if you cut it out, if you're not feeling any different after about 6 weeks, bring it back in again. You know, dairy allergy is very rare in adults. We see it a little bit in children, although egg allergy is more common. But a lot of kids grow out of it. So it's unusual. Now, they exist. You do see adults with it, but it's unusual. Or you might see lactose intolerant, which is about 10% of adults. But don't cut out dairy if you're lactose intolerant. Go on to the lactose-free milk because you'd still need the nutrition. And also remember that 24% of people who are lactose intolerant are actually celiac because that can be a symptom of celiac disease. So if you're lactose intolerant, you also need your celiac test.
Yeah. Being lactose intolerant or allergic to dairy altogether, does that vary from country to country?
So the allergy is fairly consistent, but lactose intolerance does vary hugely. In fact, the odd thing is to be tolerant of lactose. That's the rare thing in humans. Okay, so it's a lot of North Europeans, we've genetically adapted to be able to tolerate lactose as adults. Most of the rest of the world hasn't. So that's why if you, in Europe, we will drink a lot of milk. But if you move outside of Europe, you will see a lot more fermented milk, like dairy, like yogurts and cheese, because the fermentation reduces the lactose. So in Ireland, about 10% of people are lactose intolerant. In Spain, about 35% of people are lactose intolerant. You know, go out to other countries, maybe 90% of people are lactose intolerant.
That's so interesting, given that it's a kind of an adaptation. I couldn't even get through the amount of texts that are coming in to ask you questions. Though I think you might enjoy this one. I was growing up in the 90s. Bananas were demonized.
Oh, yeah.
I had a pal who used to say there's more calories in a banana than there is in a curly whirly.
I'm on Instagram at Sarah Kiordi. I had a whole post one time on all the fads I've seen in the 30 years working as a dietitian. And I actually started writing it. And I actually just nearly, it was about 6 pages in. I was like, oh my God, the amount of rubbish. Poor bananas, absolutely brilliant. There is more sugar in an apple. Everyone's like, oh my God, bananas are full of sugar. They're full of like fiber. They're grand. Bananas are totally okay. Please eat a banana. They're just lovely. Like have a fruit. It's not bars of chocolate. And you know what? The odd bar of chocolate is not going to kill you either, you know.
God, you're my favourite dietitian. Sarah, thanks for coming in to talk to us today. That was Sarah Keogh there, the dietitian.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.